Hello, and welcome to Here and Now. Today is Friday the 13th of March, and it's us again, the Green Team, all ready and willing to read you some articles from the Dawlish Gazette and the Tynmouth Post. My name is Gwen Whedon, and today I'm joined by readers Chris and Lynn, who will introduce themselves in a moment. I was interested to learn from my good friend Google that March the 13th is National Good Samaritan Day. Well, who knew? I also read that people born on March the 13th possess a unique blend of creativity, intuition, and charisma, making them stand out in a crowd. So, if today happens to be your birthday, we hope it's a very happy one, but you've certainly got a lot to live up to. Now, let's get on with our first article.
Hello, it's Chris here. I have the headline from both the Dawlish Gazette and the Tynmouth Post, exactly the same thing. Lido handed lifeline after council U-turn. Supporters of Tynmouth's popular Lido have been thrown a lifeline. A U-turn by members of Teignbridge Council's ruling executive committee means the open-air pool, which marks its 50th anniversary this year, will stay open this summer. Council has had a change of heart following a wave of protest from pool users and residents. A community group, Save the Lido, is poised and confident it can be taken over and run by the community, as other pools are across the country. More than 2,500 people signed a petition to stop the closure. Members unanimously agreed to keep the pool open this summer and work with community groups to look at how it can be run in the future. Councillor David Palethorpe, Executive Member for Economy, Estates and Major Projects, told fellow councillors, "It is clear how much the Lido means to the community. It is part of the town's character. However, we do have to think carefully about the cost and have to make savings. But we recognise the value of the facility like the Lido to people's lives and to the economy." Councillors have agreed to overturn the decision made last month not to open the pool to save £74,000. Campaigners from the Save the Lido group were at the executive meeting to hear the committee resolve to keep open the pool and to work with local community groups to explore options on how it can be operated in the future. The change of heart followed a public outcry and a wave of opposition from pool users and residents. This meant the decision was called in for councillors to reconsider. Councillor leader Richard Keeling added, "We have to save money to balance the books, and more than £1 million is being taken from reserves." Councillor Jackie Hook said, "We should be listening to residents, and the benefit of hearing the community's knowledge and passion for the Lido gave us confidence that they can bring it forward. We should be willing to change our mind." She also pointed out the current quality of bathing waters meant that pools like the Lido were important. The unanimous decision came after a packed public meeting of more than 200 people heard plans by the community group Save the Lido to take over running the open-air pool following its 50th anniversary year. Daniel O'Connell from Save the Lido said the aim of the group was to demonstrate the pool could at least break even if it operated differently. "If at the end of the year," he said, "we make £1, that is a win." The group has been working behind the scenes for more than a year, looking at options for protecting the pool if closure was proposed. It has already benefited from Teignbridge Council carrying out an £800,000 renovation and decarbonisation programme over the last couple of years. Campaigners believe the upgrades could mean the pool can open longer, which could mean generating more income. Daniel said that system should generate enough energy to keep the pool open for longer hours than the current season, which usually runs from the end of May to the end of August. The group has secured assets of community value, status for the site, giving communities time to prepare a bid if it's put up for sale. They are confident it can be run by volunteers alongside paid staff, similar to other community-run Lidos across the country. Campaigners are considering launching a crowdfunding scheme if they are given the opportunity to operate the pool.
Hello, Lynn here, and my story is all about a teenager that unfortunately died 3 years ago, and it's the anniversary of her death. Ukrainian teenager Albina Yerkov has been remembered 3 years after her death. The 14-year-old died after falling 4 metres from the Dawlish seawall in March 2023. She'd come to Dawlish a year earlier, aged 13, with her mum, Inna, as refugees following the Russian invasion of Ukraine. Mum and daughter lived with County Councillor Rosie Dawson for 9 months before finding their own home. Rosie admitted that this week has been very difficult on the anniversary of Albina's death, but she said, "I don't want her to be forgotten. She came to Dawlish with her mum after war broke out. Inna and I befriended each other and they came to live with our family for 9 months. Albina loved Dawlish. She loved being by the sea and loved how friendly everyone was. She liked school and she was a typical teenager and very talented." Less than a year later, Albina was dead. An inquest found that she had slipped off the sea wall while walking at night. Albina had gone for a walk to the shops at dusk, and when she did not return home, Inna tried calling her numerous times, but she didn't reply. She was reported missing in the evening and later found unconscious next to the sea wall on the beach. She was airlifted by Devonair Ambulance to hospital, where she unfortunately died the following morning, after doctors spent hours trying to save her. Rosie said, "It was horrific. I was very close to her and her mum, and I was at the hospital as they tried to resuscitate her. What made it worse was that there was a lot of press interest and a lot of unpleasant trolls and comments on social media, which should never have been said about a child who had escaped from a war. We can't forget her. Her voice can't be lost." A post-mortem examination gave Albina's cause of death as multiple injuries, which were in keeping with a fall from the height. Since her death, Rosie has spearheaded a campaign to improve safety along the sea wall. She said, "We've had 1,400 people sign our petition, but I feel that we haven't achieved what we set out to achieve yet, and it is personal for me now. We're not going to stop until something is done to make it safer. Albina's mum will never be the same again." And Network Rail have been carrying out a new risk assessment of the wall. Last year, they painted a white line along a section of it as a warning to pedestrians of the unprotected edge. But the rail company had previously said it was too expensive to install and maintain a safety railing, which would be vulnerable to sea damage. Speaking at the inquest, Network Rail said that there was a public right of way and access along the wall, but the Network Rail didn't invite people onto the seawall. A second woman fell to her death the following year while riding a mobility scooter along the wall. This wall was first built in 1840, and at least seven other people have died falling from the wall between 1974 and 1996. We'll have to see.
Call for stronger tax evasion enforcement. Tax evasion should be treated as a form of corruption if financial criminals are to be held accountable, a new study by a Devon University argues. Experts warn that without stronger enforcement and clearer rules on corporate liability, the UK will continue to struggle to prosecute tax offences effectively. Despite having sophisticated financial crime legislation, the country still fails to hold companies and senior executives meaningfully accountable for corporate tax crime and corruption. The research by Professor Umut Turkson from the University of Exeter and Dr. Alison Louis from Liverpool John Moores University says, "Experts warn the UK lacks a single coherent definition of tax crime. Offences are dispersed across common law and a patchwork of statutes, creating uncertainty for policymakers, prosecutors, and researchers. This ambiguity allows individuals and organisations to exploit gaps through profit shifting schemes, opaque corporate structures and offshore arrangements. They argue tax crime and corruption are wrongly treated as separate domains, one focused on evasion, the other on bribery and abuse of power. In practice, the two are deeply interconnected. Professor Turkson said, on paper, the UK has strong tools to criminalise tax offences and hold organisations accountable. Common law offences, such as conspiracy to defraud, and statutory offences under the Taxes Management Act and VAT Act, give prosecutors broad scope. Strict liability offences even remove the need to prove intent, but in practice, enforcement is weak. HMRC's long-standing preference for civil recovery over criminal prosecution reflects a revenue-first mindset. Prosecution is seen as inefficient and risky. The study says the scale of under-enforcement is stark. Out of 76,000 suspected tax fraud reports in 2022-23, only 540 individuals were charged. For corporations, the failure to prevent model, introduced in the Bribery Act 2010 and expanded through the Criminal Finances Act 2017, was intended to overcome the identification doctrine. Instead, it has become heavily intertwined with the deferred prosecution agreements, which allow companies to avoid conviction in exchange for cooperation and compliance reforms. Dr. Louis said, the current legal architecture suffers from significant inconsistencies in scope, terminology, and enforcement rationale, especially when applied to corporate failure to prevent tax-related offences. It lacks the coherence necessary for streamlined enforcement and creates significant interpretive latitude.
Winner scoops £25,000 prize in local lottery. One Teignbridge resident is celebrating after scooping the first £25,000 weekly jackpot. This is a win in the history of Teignbridge Lottery for Communities. The winning ticket matched all six numbers in the draw that was held on Saturday the 21st of February, making this the first £25,000 jackpot winner since the lottery launched in 2022. It was a particularly lucky week for local players, with seven other residents also winning £25 prizes. Since launching the Teignbridge Lottery for Communities, it has sold 267,394 tickets and awarded more than £62,000 in prize money, including six £2,000 winners, 45 £250 winners, 554 £25 winners, and one winner in the monthly prize draw, a £1,500 theatre trip. Tickets cost a pound, with 60 pence from every ticket going directly to local good causes, 50 pence to the player's chosen charity, and 10 pence to a central community fund. Every ticket has 1 in 50 chance of winning a prize each week. The lottery is run in partnership with Teignbridge CVS to support local community projects, giving groups a simple and effective way to raise additional funds. Sarah Richards, Chief Officer for Teignbridge CVS, said, "We're absolutely delighted to see a local resident scoop the £25,000 jackpot, and even more pleased that their win also benefits Volunteering in Health, one of the many incredible charities working tirelessly for our communities." The Teignbridge Lottery for Communities is a powerful way for residents to support the groups that matter most to them. Every ticket purchased directly strengthens the vital services that keep our district connected, compassionate and resilient. With more than 100 good local causes now involved, this win is a brilliant reminder of the real impact the lottery has, not just for players, but for the volunteers, community groups and residents who rely on these services every day. Volunteering in health also supports clients in their journey to improve health and well-being by providing one-to-one well-being support or weekly calls, and they can connect with and support clients during and following a stay in hospital. Nikki Engert, Office Manager for Volunteering in Health, said, "We were so surprised and absolutely thrilled to learn that one lucky Volunteering in Health supporter has won the jackpot. The lottery has gone from strength to strength since it launched, and this fantastic win will give it an extra boost."
Over 7 million start new jobs during 2025. His Majesty's Revenue and Customs, HMRC, has revealed more than 7 million people started a new job in 2025. As National Careers Week is underway, it is reminding those starting a new job in 2026 to download the HMRC app for their essential tax and employment details. Whether it's a young person on the hunt for their first job, or someone looking for a new challenge, a change of career or a promotion, the HMRC app provides users with access to all the employment and tax-related information they need. Spring is always the busiest time for new recruits. Last year, more than 1.8 million people started a new job between April and June 2025. Downloading the app can help avoid those first day nerves and is quick and easy to do via gov.uk or from the App Store or Google Play. At the touch of a button, it can display information often asked for by recruiters and employers when someone starts a new job, including the national insurance number, employment and income history, pay as you earn, information including the P60 and your tax code. Myrtle Lloyd, HMRC's Chief Customer Officer, said, "Applying for a job or starting a new job can be hard work in itself, but the HMRC app provides you with the handy access to everything you need to make the admin side of things a little easier, especially important for young people who may not know what information an employer requires. More than 507,000 people use the tax calculator to work out their tax and their pay on salary.
Councillors call for answers over bus delays. Newton Abbott Town Council has pledged to speak up on behalf of bus users fed up with delays and cancelled services. Also causing grumbles are the company's new ticket zones, difficulty contacting helplines, and an app which fails to deliver real-time travel information. Members held talks with Managing Director of Stagecoach Southwest, Peter Knight. They learned that despite the firm having very few driver vacancies, generous local authority subsidies, and an upcoming £45 million investment in new vehicles, it wasn't always possible to guarantee the timetable. Mr. Knight said the biggest problem was uncoordinated roadworks and performance of the highway network. Describing the situation in and around Newton Abbott, he said, "It's a very, very difficult set of circumstances. The roadworks in Newton Abbott, it's a shambles, really. The road network around here hasn't been normal since October. I'm sorry about the issues your constituents face." Mr. Knight acknowledged the problems, but also encouraged the council to appoint someone to sit on the Devonshire Bus Enhanced Partnership. He said, "We are very proud to serve our community," and went on to say, "but pleading with customers not to vent their anger on drivers," he added, "I beg you, do not take it out on them."
Devon Council to explore new housing options. Members of Devon County Council will be asked to give the green light to exploring innovative housing solutions for people who need it most. The Matford offices site at County Hall, Exeter, which has been declared surplus, was formerly used as council offices and includes a small area of public open space. The recommendation being put to Cabinet is that the development of this site. The recommendations also include safeguards to protect trees and a green corridor between the site and Matford Lane, and retain key walking routes. Councillor Julian Brazil, leader of the council, said, "By prioritising care leaver housing, key worker accommodation, including teachers and nurses, and affordable homes, we are aligning our assets with our wider responsibilities and strategic priorities. Any future developments would be subject to full planning process."
Heartbreak as Llama Walks is to close. A llama trekking business on Dartmoor has announced its closure. Debbie Duke and Scarlett Moon of Dartmoor Llama Walks made the announcement on Monday, March the 2nd. In a joint statement, Debbie and Scarlett said, "It's with great sadness, but we announce the closing of Dartmoor Llama Walks. Due to an unexpected and deeply challenging personal situation beyond our control, we have no choice but to close this business. We are completely heartbroken, especially as we're only a few years into our dream adventure. To all those lovely people who love our llamas just like we do, please be assured that they are our number one priority. The business will be for sale, and only first-class homes will be considered for the Dartmoor Llama team." Debbie and Scarlett bought the business in June 2024 from previous owners Steve and Diane Weymouth, who after nearly 20 years sold the business due to personal reasons. At the time, the couple said they hoped someone with land or near Dartmoor might be able to take on the business, which featured in a 2016 TV documentary as a going concern. Just days later, Debbie and Scarlett, who've been friends for years, having shared school runs and endless coffees and a lifelong love of animals and Dartmoor, got in touch and purchased Dartmoor Llama Walks. The statement goes on to say, "If you or anyone you know is interested in an exciting, thriving and unique business adventure, please get in touch. And if for any reason the business is not transferred, the llamas will remain at home with us. We're no longer able to accept new bookings, but we do intend to honour all valid gift vouchers." And there's a lovely photo of the llama team, along with Scarlett and Debbie, on beautiful Dartmoor.
Yet another article about buses, and this one's entitled "Call for Fairer Bus Fares in Dawlish." A campaign has been launched to demand fair and equal bus fares for Dawlish. The Fair Fares campaign comes as Stagecoach Southwest introduced new ticketing zones, which critics argue effectively split Dawlish and Dawlish Warren in two. The campaign by Town and District Councillor Alison Foden, a regular bus user who has been fighting for improved services for years, says this is hugely unfair. But there continues to be confusion over the precise borders of the zones. A spokesman for Stagecoach Southwest said both Dawlish and Dawlish Warren are included in the Torbay zone. However, Councillor Foden raised the issue of the split when Stagecoach Managing Director Peter Knight attended a meeting of Dawlish Town Council to discuss bus services. She said Mr. Knight replied, "You were entirely correct. I stated at the meeting that Dawlish fell within the Greater Exeter Zone. On checking our information, it does not, and I apologise for the mistake. Dawlish Warren does fall within it, however. Dawlish itself does not. Our priority is to provide a clear, fair and financially sustainable fare system that serves the greatest number of customers." Dawlish Town Councillors have since backed a motion by Councillor Foden to write to Mr. Knight demanding fair and equitable bus fares for the whole of Dawlish. The campaign is asking Stagecoach to look again at the zone areas to ensure fairness for all residents. MP Martin Wrigley is also backing the campaign.
Backing for camera that caught 6,000 drivers. A controversial Teignbridge speed camera which caught 6,000 drivers going over a 30-mile-per-hour speed limit in its first 3 months has been backed by local councillors. "Own the consequences of your actions and slow down," Councillor Sally Morgan told fellow members of Teignbridge Council. The authority overwhelmingly rejected a motion by Councillor Phil Bullivant calling on the council to ask the Highways Authority why the camera had been installed, who decided when and where it should be installed, and how many people have been issued with tickets for doing 35 miles per hour or more. He also wanted to know if the installation in Ashburton Road met national standards for speed camera locations. People should not exceed the speed limits, he said. Speeding is unacceptable at any time, but it appears that the installation of this camera does not conform to national standards. I'm looking for clarity on behalf of residents. This is about having appropriate checks and balances. If you put an installation in, it has to conform to the standards, and this does not. But, said Councillor Leader Richard Keeling, the simple answer is, don't speed on that road. Councillor Rosie Dawson said speed cameras were put in places where there was a risk to children or vulnerable people, and Councillor Colin Parker said it was nonsensical to say that the camera should not be there. The Devon and Cornwall Police Road Safety Team says it installed the camera in conjunction with Devon County Council and the Vision Zero South West Road Safety Partnership. It is within 300 metres of a children's play park, a family centre and sheltered accommodation, and there have been 9 injury collisions on the road in the last 5 years. Camera warning signs were put up despite them not being a legal requirement. Police say the number of times the camera is activated is falling every month, proving it's doing its job in slowing drivers.
2.8 million trial into better support for autism. A new trial led by Devon University could significantly benefit autistic children and their families and the care provided across the entire UK healthcare system. Autism is thought to affect about 2% of the UK population, with the most recent estimates suggesting that diagnostic and support costs total in excess of £32 billion per year. Despite this, autism care and support in the UK is seen and experienced by many as at its best disjointed and more often non-existent. Autism is experienced by entire family units, yet many existing healthcare systems do not take wider effects on the whole family into account. A major new trial led by the University of Plymouth and funded through a grant of more than £2.8 million from the National Institute for Health and Care Research aims to help address that. It will examine whether a specially developed package of support, SAFE, systematic autism-related family enabling, can significantly improve the mental health, well-being and functioning of all family members and give them coping mechanisms that build their capability to manage some of the challenges that often surround or accompany a diagnosis of autism. The new trial could significantly benefit autistic children and their families. SAFE will be trialled or has already been trialled and developed and tested through a feasibility study and other research and community-based initiatives funded by the NIHR organisation and Autistica in conjunction with. The new project will be the largest yet to explore its potential benefits for the families. It will also explore how SAFE might be applied right across the NHS, so its benefits for autistic children and their families will be seen every day. The new trial will be managed by the Peninsula Clinical Trials Unit and will recruit almost 500 families of autistic children from sites across England. From these families, more than 320 will be chosen at random to receive SAFE, as well as the usual care that would be offered by the NHS or their local authority. The other families will only receive their usual care. All the participants will be asked to complete questionnaires before and after going through the SAFE process or the usual care process, and then a final questionnaire a year after being chosen at random. The researchers will use the answers provided to measure the changes in communication, coping with difficulties, family strengths and well-being, and families will also be invited to talk in groups about taking part in this study.
Students get taste of railways work. Four students from Newton Abbott were given the chance to learn about working in the railway industry. The Year 12 students from South Devon UTC completed a four-day work placement with Network Rail, gaining insight into careers in the railway and construction industries. The placement gave students the opportunity to experience the scale and complexity of major infrastructure projects firsthand. Through site visits, practical experiences, and talks from industry professionals, students developed a deeper understanding of engineering in action and the wide range of careers available within the sector. Students visited Bristol Temple Meads Station, where they were introduced to ongoing and completed projects across the historic station. This provided an overview of how large-scale infrastructure improvements are planned and delivered. The second day began at the Dawlish Seawall, where students learned about coastal defence engineering and the challenges of maintaining critical rail links in extreme weather conditions. They then travelled to Exeter St David's Depot with GWR, exploring train simulators, maintenance facilities, and depot operations to see how rolling stock is serviced and managed. The final 2 days were spent visiting live project sites across Devon and Cornwall. Students observed bridge renewal works, new station developments, and building refurbishments, working alongside construction managers and project teams to understand how projects are delivered safely and efficiently. Daniel Parks, Principal Portfolio Manager within Network Rail's Integrated Infrastructure team, said, "All four students were an absolute pleasure and engaged with us throughout. We had really positive feedback from the rest of the team who supported their visits. At least two of the students seem set on being part of the railway industry going forward in their careers."
Chatty benches to fight loneliness. A nationwide drive to combat loneliness by getting people to sit down for a chat together could be coming to South Devon, despite fears they might attract creepy people. So-called chatty benches are springing up around the country, complete with plaques explaining that by sitting on one, people are open to having a chat, conversation with a stranger. Now they could be coming to Teignbridge, despite some councillors' reservations. Members of Teignbridge Council also discussed what colour the benches should be. The idea was put forward by Councillor Chris Clarence, who said creating a chatty bench should be an option for local people wanting to buy memorial benches. He said councils elsewhere in the UK had taken the idea on board, and Teignbridge should do so too. His motion to the council said, "I for one would like to do this by providing such a bench on behalf of a deceased neighbour who passed away aged 99. She admitted to my wife Sally, who cared for her for over the last 2 years of her life, that before this she had been very lonely in life. He said it would be part of his legacy as a councillor. However, Councillor Jane Taylor said she wouldn't support the initiative because it would put conditions on sitting down at a bench, in that people would have to chat to strangers if they sat there. Councillor Andrew McGregor said he also had reservations, and Councillor Phil Bullivant warned we should be very careful. Potentially we are signposting people who are vulnerable, he added. These benches need to be located in places where they can be adequately supervised. Be careful what you wish for. However, Councillor Suzanne Saunders said the initiative was supported by mental health groups. They wouldn't exist if there was a real cause for concern, she said. What a sorry world we live in, where we can't talk to each other in public, freely without fear. The motion to offer people a chance to buy a chatty bench was passed.
There's just one obituary this week, and it's for Sylvia Botell, also known as Sue. Aged 97 years, she died in the early morning of February the 20th at Barton House Care Home in Dawlish. And Sue had retired to Dawlish, and she was a stalwart of the Ladies Guild, the Garden Society, and Dawlish Museum volunteer. She was also one of our listeners. Her funeral will be a private affair, so there is no other information than that. And moving on to events, a quick reminder of what's happening next week. Dawlish Community Transport are going to Bickley Mill and Fisherman's Cot on the cottage on the 17th of March on Tuesday. There is also a talk on the history of Dawlish at the Manor. Wednesday the 18th, Holcombe Garden Society meet. Saturday and Sunday, the Shanty Festival at Starcross and Cockwood. Then for the week after that, Tuesday the 24th of March, Dawlish Community Transport are going to Homeley Garden Centre in Crediton. Wednesday the 25th, there is a Lent lunch at Kenton Church, £6 per ticket, and donations are going to Moldova and Ukraine. Thursday the 26th, Dawlish Garden Society has its Spring Flower Show and AGM, 7pm at the Manor House. Saturday the 28th, Val Morwood is holding a garden-related sale outside the Strand Centre in Dawlish from 10am. Any garden-related items would be welcome to sell in aid of the Dawlish Twinning Association. There's also a pop-up market and social event at the Victory Hall in Kenton from 1 till 5, and a beer and cider festival from 12 noon, at the Strand Centre in Dawlish.
Higher charges for Dartmoor car parks. Car parking fees are bringing in £200,000 of income to Dartmoor National Park Authority each year, but it is seeking more money-making assets and ideas to plug its shortfall in government funding. Although a much larger area than Dartmoor, the Lake District National Park is making £1 million from car parking fees each year. Dartmoor only has a small number of paying car parks, 6 in total, but whether there will be more in the future will be a decision for the Park Authority, which is about to enter a new era following the retirement this month of the Chief Executive of 18 years, Dr. Kevin Bishop. Former civil servant Tom Surrey will be taking over the helm and will have responsibility for implementing the new business plan. Dr. Bishop and the Dartmoor National Park Authority have been very successful over the last few years in diversifying income streams and its practical project work from Dartmoor's dynamic landscapes to Dartmoor Headwaters project, which were almost all funded by external sources through competitive funding bids. But the Park Authority has been frustrated by its flat cash settlement from the government in recent years to pay for day-to-day services, which have resulted in a real-term cut of 54%. An authority meeting heard this week that in cash terms, if the National Park grant had kept pace with inflation, it would now be worth more than £7.7 million. But in fact, Dartmoor National Park Authority is anticipating receiving a revenue grant of £3.5 million for the 2026 to 2027 year. Currently, the grant accounts for 52% of the revenue income, with the rest made up from car park charges and other fees and charges, such as planning and donations from Donate for Dartmoor scheme. Dr. Bishop said that the Dartmoor National Park Authority did not own many assets, and that was what made it different to many park authorities. He said money-making ideas in other areas of the country included cycle hire in the Peak District and navigation tolls on the Norfolk Broads. It was once suggested that people should pay to enter Dartmoor National Park in order for the authority to be self-sufficient, but this was seen as very controversial. Next year, the Park Authority is looking at introducing a volunteer coordinator and boosting its numbers of volunteers. An ambition in its business plan is to have 4,000 volunteer days organised or supported by Dartmoor National Park per annum and 65 new housing units each year. Park members approved a 2026-7 balance budget on Friday based on a flat cash settlement with the potential use of some earmarked reserves of £528,000 should it be needed to make up this shortfall.
Recycling to rise amid new reforms. Recycling in Devon is set to increase thanks to new, simpler recycling reforms announced by the UK government. Local authorities in England must start working towards collecting a core set of materials in household recycling collections, including metal, glass, paper, card, plastic, cartons, and food waste. The reforms have been introduced to standardise recycling nationally, eliminate confusion over what can be recycled, and increase the UK's current recycling rate. Councillor Jackie Hodgson, Cabinet Member for Climate Change and Biodiversity, said, "The simpler recycling reforms are a step in the right direction and should make it much easier and less confusing for people to recycle at home, school, and work. Devon residents already do a fantastic job at recycling, but any measures that make recycling easier is a change for the better. Hopefully, we will see recycling rates increase in Devon and nationally as a result." In 2024-25, Devon maintained one of the highest recycling rates in England at 54.2%, placing it second nationally. Most councils in Devon either already collect these core materials from households or can add them to existing containers, and any additional materials will be added gradually with any changes communicated to residents. The reforms standardise which items must be recycled but do not mandate how household recycling is collected. Currently, each local authority decides which collection system, either bins, boxes or bags, is suitable for its area, based on funding, housing type and other factors. And just to make sure that we're not in any doubt what this article is about, there's a picture of a man in a high-vis jacket with a recycling box.
Ambulance service wants your opinion. The South Western Ambulance Service NHS Foundation Trust is relaunching its public engagement forum with a refreshed name and a renewed focus. The charity is inviting people from across the South West to help shape the future of their local ambulance service. Formerly known as the Patient Participation Panel, the newly renamed Community Feedback Forum reflects a more inclusive approach to engagement, recognising that valuable feedback comes not only from patients, but also from carers, families and the wider community. The first Community Feedback Forum will take place on Friday, March 13th, that's today, from 4pm to 5:30 via Microsoft Teams, with further sessions held on Wednesday, June the 17th from 11 to 12:30, Tuesday, September the 8th from 5 to 6pm, and Thursday, December the 10th from 12 to 1:30. The refreshed forum aims to create an open, inclusive and collaborative space where people can have honest conversations about their experiences with the Trust and help shape how services develop in the future. The forum will provide the opportunity to share experiences and insights about ambulance services through the quarterly accessible online meetings, hear from guest speakers involved in a typical patient journey, from 999 call handlers to paramedics, suggest ideas for improvement and innovation, helping to influence service development and decision making, participate in open, constructive discussions with the organisational leaders. Nigel Jones, co-chairman of the Community Feedback Forum, said, "This forum is an incredibly important part of how our ambulance service in the South West can keep improving for the communities it serves. It gives people the chance to talk honestly about what worked well for them, what could be better, and what really matters when you or your loved one needs care."
Region invited to join debate on energy. People across the South West are being asked for their views on the future of energy in the region. National Grid Electricity Distribution is holding an in-person and online event in April to hear what its customers want from the electricity network. The company is inviting views on how it can support communities, economic growth, jobs and skills during two big conversation events being held on Tuesday, the 14th of April. Feedback from residents, businesses, local authorities, public bodies and charities will then shape the company's regional investment plan for 2028 to 2033. National Grid Electricity Distribution is keen to know what matters most to customers when it comes to delivering reliable, affordable and inclusive services. Sarah Jeffries, Head of Community and Customer Engagement, said, "We are hosting a series of events to hear from regional voices about how and where we should be investing for the future. We want to learn how we can better support our 1.2 million customers in the Southwest and create a cleaner, more resilient energy system." The in-place event is taking place at the Exeter Chiefs Sandy Park Stadium on Tuesday, April 14th, from 10 a.m, including lunch. The online event will take place at the same time from 10 a.m. till 3 p.m. Residents need to register to attend either event by going to a website https://tinyurl.com/29hu5y4f. National Grid provides power to 20 million homes and businesses across the Midlands, South West and South Wales, also managing the high voltage network in England and Wales. They employ more than 30,000 people and are listed on the London Stock Exchange. They're planning to invest £60 billion in 2029 to modernise our networks, enable cleaner energy and strengthen security of supply, and working to help grow economies across the UK.
Walkers reminded to stay away from the seawall. Engineers repairing the seawall footpath at Dawlish have urged people to avoid the area while work is completed. Gates were put up recently to prevent walkers from using the footpath for safety reasons. Warning signs put up previously had been ignored, so hence the gates were installed. Network Rail says it has now moved the closure of the old sea wall slightly back towards Dawlish from the Langston Red Rock end. This means anyone on the beach at that point can get back up to the footpath. At the Dawlish end, the footpath remains closed at Coast Guards, where the old sea wall meets the new. A spokesman for Network Rail said, "Unfortunately, we're still receiving reports of people climbing over the gates. Please don't attempt to do this. The path is closed to keep everyone safe while we carry out the repairs." The spokesman explained, "Our work is going to take a number of weeks, so the footpath is unlikely to reopen by the Easter holidays. Work in Tynmouth at Spray Point is expected to be opened soon and was kept closed for a few more days than had been anticipated in order to keep the walkers and machinery separate."
MP visits the eyes and ears along our coast. Local MP Martin Wrigley has paid tribute to the vital work of the National Coast Watch Institution while visiting volunteers at the Tynmouth Coast Watch Station, acknowledging their dedication and critical role in maritime safety. The visit, at the invitation of Station Manager James Campbell, saw Martin tour the lookout at Eastcliff. During the visit, he presented a long service certificate to David Carswell, watchkeeper and rotor manager, marking his 10 years of continuous volunteering. The NCI is one of the voluntary organisations that form the backbone of the search and rescue community around our coast, in conjunction with the RNLI and Coast Guard teams, said Martin. "They are truly the eyes and ears along the coast, and I was delighted to visit and to applaud the team's work."
Youth Cafe wins £7,000 grant to tackle issues. So a £7,000 grant has been awarded to Bovey Tracy Youth Action from town councillors to support its work with young people. Its youth cafe was amongst recipients of almost £16,000 handed out to community groups by the Town Council. Councillors heard from Bovey Tracy Action Operations Manager, Jez Butcher, who reported an increasing demand for its services. He said one of the reasons for the youth cafe having to offer more was a reduction in the support once provided by Devon County Council and other official bodies. Bullying and the increasing use of weed vapes were common issues, the latter particularly worrying as they are cheap, readily available and can contain toxic substances. "It's a massive issue here," said Mr. Butcher. "There is no other youth service of this ilk. You need to fight and you need to complain to get the services you need as a voluntary organisation. We can't fix everything. We can't wave a magic wand. But the young people of Bovey Tracy and Heathfield deserve somewhere that they can get these things. An increasing number of children were either not receiving the correct type of education or had left the school system entirely. The group has extended its offer to 18-year-olds and hopes to increase the number of evenings the cafe opens from 2 evenings to 3. As many as 40 youngsters attend each session, with 25 to 35 being the commonplace number. One of the most valued aspects of the cafe, members heard, was a safe space in which youngsters could discuss personal problems. Also in line for a financial boost is Teignbridge Citizens Advice, whose request for £5,383 was approved, and a further £1,500 will go to the Moreland Community Caring for projects, such as Older People's Support Hub at Methodist Hall, plus a £1,028 was allocated to the Bovey Tracy Information Centre and £940 to Better Places CIC, the group which offers free children's holiday activities. Member of the Council's Finance, Resource and General Purpose Committee approved all of these payments.
Council backs rugby club firework event. Councillors in Teignmouth have opted to support an existing firework display this year. After negotiations failed between Teignmouth Town Council and Sheldon Parish Council over arrangements for this year's display, Teignmouth has confirmed it will be supporting Teignmouth Rugby Club's annual event instead. A spokesman said, "Teignmouth Town Council is proud to confirm that we will be supporting the fantastic community fireworks event hosted by Teignmouth Rugby Club in 2026, and we are especially pleased to share that this will be a free event for everyone to enjoy." Previously, the Town Council had worked with Sheldon Parish Council for a joint display from the Point in Teignmouth with a bonfire on Sheldon Beach. But disagreements over arrangements for last year's display and talks over the logistics for future events led Teignmouth councillors to withdraw supporting this joint event. The Town Council said, "We are pleased to be backing a brilliant local event right here in Teignmouth. Teignmouth RFC has a strong back record of bringing people together, and we are excited to work alongside them to help make the 2026 firework display bigger and better than ever." Meanwhile, in Sheldon, the Parish Council has vowed to do all it can to continue its November display.
House builder smashes target to raise over £17,000 for the hospice. More than £17,000 has been raised for Rowcroft Hospice by a Newton Abbott-based house builder. Baker Estates handed over the cash following a year-long programme of community and fundraising activities, held to mark the company's 10th anniversary in 2025. The company had set out to raise £10,000, but went above and beyond its target. Throughout the anniversary year, the Baker Estates team, local residents, charities, partners and supporters took part in a wide range of initiatives designed to support the vital work of Rowcroft Hospice. Activities included community events, a workplace bake-off and charity running challenges. One of the standout highlights of the fundraising programme was the Baker Estates Anniversary Golf Day. Adding a memorable and entertaining twist to the event, a top Donald Trump impersonator hosted the charity auction, helping drive bids and boost donations. Rowcroft Hospice provides specialist end-of-life care and support to patients and their families across South Devon, and the fund raised will help ensure these essential services can continue. Mark Hawkins, Chief Executive Officer of Rowcroft Hospice, added, "What an amazing effort, and our thanks go to everyone who helped with this incredible fundraising challenge." Some support from local businesses like Baker Estates makes a huge difference to the patients and families in our care. Their year-long commitment and the fantastic total raised will help us continue providing compassionate end-of-life care to people across South Devon. Graham Hutton, Deputy Managing Director of Baker Estates, said, "Reaching our 10th anniversary was a milestone, and we wanted to celebrate in a meaningful way. This achievement reflects the generosity and enthusiasm of our team, our partners, and the wider community, and we'd like to thank everyone who took part or donated throughout the year."
Harry the Seagull debuts in Tynmouth. A Tynmouth shop owner has put pen to paper and published her first children's book. Devon Sandbox Dawn Head debuted her new project at the end of February. Dawn said, "I had a local author reach out asking if we would sell some local authors' books. As a shop that stocks local artists and crafters' ware, I thought it would be a good idea to incorporate the books into the shop, and I organised an evening where some of the authors came and read parts of them. After listening to the talent, I thought I'd like to have a go at writing a children's book, and that's exactly what Dawn did, introducing Harry the Hungry Seagull. Illustrated by a friend and a local artist, Chris Yarwood, the book follows the Harry arriving in Tynmouth for the very first time, being shown around the seaside town by a new friend. After a few weeks of thinking about what to base the book on, a seagull came to mind," Dawn said. "We all know they are the bane of our lives in the summer. I've included a couple of local landmarks and independent shops in the story. Harry's inaugural adventure has proved popular with the Tynmouth community. Dawn has sold out of the 30 copies she had stocked on Saturday, that was February the 28th, but there's plenty more to come, with Dawn and Chris looking to collaborate on more books following the adventures of Harry as he explores Tynmouth with his friends on a search for food." There's a lovely photograph of Dawn accompanying this article, holding her book, of course, at Devon Sandbox in Tynmouth.
Salty Sam Trail to boost Tynmouth. Salty Sam is coming to Tynmouth. The new character is part of an initiative by Tynmouth Town Council to introduce a Salty Sam Trail for locals and visitors as a guide around the town. The council is hoping artists will come forward to come up with designs for the figure. A town council spokesman said, "This community-driven project aims to invigorate the heart of Tynmouth by encouraging both locals and visitors to explore beyond the beach and discover the charm of our vibrant town." Spearheaded by councillors Keith Underhill and Robert Phipps, the Salty Sam Trail is designed to draw visitors away from the beach for a short while and encourage them to explore the town through a guided walk. This trail will lead participants through the main shopping areas and places of interest, and the aim is to increase footfall for local businesses and attractions. Councillor Phipps has secured a grant from the Town Council to help create models for the trail. The spokesman said, "After much consideration and collaboration, we've chosen to incorporate the Salty Sailor models, which are both eye-catching and budget-friendly." Well, that brings us to the end of our recording for this week. If you have any comments or suggestions, you can contact us on 07376 147 374. Your readers this week were Chris, Lynn and myself, and our producer is Mike. As usual, the copying and dispatching is a team effort. So until next time, it's goodbye from us here in the studio.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.